My name is Janet Pelly. I'm the conservation chair for the Toronto Group of the Sierra Club. We have a Challenge to Sprawl campaign that we're working on because our group decided that suburban sprawl development was the biggest environmental threat to the GTA, primarily because it touches on all the environmental issues. It's not just about congestion. It's about quality of life, pollution of the air, pollution of the water. And it also relates to our goal to cut our release of greenhouse gases. Now we've signed on to the Kyoto Protocol. It's crucial for Canadians to address those releases through better transportation and better land use planning.
Has the Sierra Club made an official position on the Red Hill Creek Expressway?
We're vehemently opposed to that. We're very upset about that and the way that the government's been handling it. And the thing is that there's great examples around the Great Lakes basins of other jurisdictions that have handled problems like this in a much more participatory way, and they've come up with better and cheaper solutions than building freeways and bypasses. And just a couple I'd like to talk about today. Some neat examples from across the border over in the U.S. One that I really like is one from a little town called Petoskey, Michigan. It's on the shores of Lake Michigan. It's a beautiful tourist area, so a lot of people come there for the natural beauty. For a long time, you know, like the Red Hill Creek Expressway, the Department of Transportation in Michigan had for many years been planning to put a bypass around the town that would take the traffic off the main route through the town on this bypass, something like, I think it was a $90 million project. And as in Hamilton, the citizens were very opposed to it. Unlike the Hamilton situation in Michigan, what happened was the Michigan Department of Transportation actually listened to the citizens. The citizens got together. They hired a transportation planning company from Chicago to come and help them do a planning process, a visioning process for their city, where they came up with a non-highway alternative that would improve traffic in the area, maintain the vitality of their historic downtown without doing a bypass, which would ruin the downtown. It would suck all the business and traffic out of that area. And they were able to convince the Department of Transportation this was better. And what's even more exciting is that instead of wasting $90 million on this bypass, the Michigan Department of Transportation said, we are going to pay for further study and implementation of the citizens' vision. And so what the Department of Transportation is doing, instead of driving and forcing these projects on communities, they're taking on a role as a technical assistance planner and financial backer and letting the citizens drive the process. And that's what we'd like to see up here in Canada.
What was their alternative to freeways?
Their alternative to freeways was to link up some of the local existing roads that hadn't been linked. That would improve traffic flow. Similar to the situation in Hamilton, even though the Department of Transportation was pushing the highway, there really wasn't a need for it. That was part of the study, too. They showed that there wasn't a significant need for the highway, that it would only draw a small percentage of the traffic off of that main street through the town.
Now, when I talked to Don McLean of the Friends of Red Hill Creek, he said that actually there are a lot of examples in the U.S. of communities that are saying building freeways is an outmoded way of doing things. Would you agree with this statement?
There's some examples like Petoskey, also in the Great Lakes Basin, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, recently tore down an expressway, opening up 26 acres of land in Milwaukee near their riverfront for redevelopment. And their mayor is just a wonderful man. He knows the stuff. He knows smart growth. And he and his planners have set up guidelines for redeveloping the area. They've allowed developers can put in any style they want, but it has to be street friendly. There has to be openness, windows and doors on the street level. There's a limit to height, so the buildings are built on a human scale. I think it's like 4 or 6 stories is as high as they can go. And the plan is set up to have treed boulevards. It'll encourage people to live and recreate downtown.
So that sounds like that's a longer term kind of thing about changing attitudes, though. But I'm thinking, I came in this morning on the QEW on GO Transit. It's normally a 45 to 50 minute trip, and I sat there for an hour and a half. Now, to be the, wow, you know, to present the other side of the story, it's like cities where there are a lot of cars need to have freeways in order to get around. I mean, first of all, I guess I should ask you, do you agree with that statement?
Oh, that cities with lots of cars need freeways? It depends on how your city is built. I mean, if you're assuming that people have to have cars, then you're going to be sucked into that whole car junkie habit of we have to have more freeways to get people to move around. And that's really like a solution from the 1950s. It's been proven not to work. And so it's really key how you build your city. If you build your city for pedestrians and for public transit, then you don't have to worry about the car traffic.
But we have cities that aren't built that way. I mean, that's the reality. Yeah. So what do we do in existing urban areas where they're just not set up for it to be pedestrian friendly? Mm-hmm. There isn't enough public transit. So where do we go from here in the short term?
Yeah, that's a good point. We've built, especially outside the older city of Toronto, we've built all of our new development for cars. 70% of the impervious surface is dedicated to car habitat, like roads and parking lots. In the U.S., there's a couple of examples where there are proposals to redevelop these areas that are devoted to cars and make them pedestrian friendly. Now, the key to that is transit. You have to have transit running through. And there's an example in Virginia, just outside the Washington, D.C. metro area, where they have an existing transit line with a stop. Presently, it's surrounded by a mall and parking lots. It's pretty hideous. A nonprofit group, the Chesapeake Bay Foundation, has put together a plan for how they can redevelop that transit node with houses, townhomes, a little village center, so that people could live and shop and go to their schools and run errands right at that transit node. And then if they need to work in D.C., they can walk over to the subway and take that downtown. And so, yes, it is possible to redevelop these areas.
You've arrived in Canada fairly recently, just 4 years ago, and you've seen a lot of things happen in American cities. Taking a look at what's happening in Hamilton right now with the Red Hill Creek Expressway, what would you say that your impressions of the whole situation and the political leadership of Hamilton is? What's this saying about the city?
It's really very sad because the city is taking a confrontational approach with the citizens, and that's bad. Years ago, they should have sat down with the citizens, as some of these other cities in the U.S. have done, and listened to what the citizens had to suggest, because in all these cases, the citizens come up with solutions that are better and that are cheaper, and then you avoid these costly delays and arguments. It's costing a lot of money. You know, they've just spent a lot of money recently, you know, in Hamilton, on a court decision to stop people from protesting. And all this could have been avoided if there was strong political leadership that really believed in democracy, in listening to the citizens and having them participate in decisions.
Now, you told me about another case, too, where you know of a potential freeway which has been in dispute for 50 years, right? That was the one in Maryland, you're saying?
Oh, yeah.
So in terms of, I'm looking at what's happening in Hamilton and that one in Maryland, and it's like they've been going for 50 years. But I guess what I'd like to ask you is this really a 1950s dispute that hasn't been updated and modernized to 21st century standards?
The fact that you see on both sides of the border that there are these battles over freeways that have been going on for 50 years just shows it's an outmoded way of thinking. The government hasn't caught up with the new smart growth initiatives and the new ways people are looking at cities. A good example in Maryland is the intercounty connector that was proposed to connect business areas over on the west side of the Washington suburban area with the airport near Baltimore. And basically, it would be the first section of another beltway around Washington, D.C. There's an existing beltway. This would be like an outer ring. I love that there was a mayor in Bogota, Colombia, a fellow named Peñalosa, who said that solving congestion by building more highways is like putting out a fire with gasoline. It just makes the problem worse. again, citizens in Maryland were able to pull together data showing that this new highway would be congested within 5 years of construction. It would not relieve congestion on the existing beltway, and it would drive suburban sprawl development. Fortunately, they caught the ear of the governor at the time, and he quashed the project. But there's a new governor, and the project is rising yet again. And so the battle will continue.
Do you know of any other battles that have been this lengthy in the U.S.? Are these Red Hill and Maryland are the two prime examples?
Those are good examples. And there's also a more positive example over on the West Coast in Portland, Oregon. Again, a highway had been proposed, I think, roughly 30 to 50 years ago. And, it had been battled for a long time, and it was finally put to rest in the 1990s. Again, as in Petoskey, when citizens got together, they funded their own study, and they called it a study of land use, transportation, and air quality. And they were able to show that the city of Portland could avoid building this highway by instead improving their use of land by promoting what's called transit-oriented developments. That's kind of like the one that I was talking about that was proposed for Virginia, where you plan your transit and around those nodes you encourage development so that people don't have to use their cars to get around. They've done that in Portland, and the highway was killed. They have a very successful transit system. They have a light rail system. They have buses that feed into it. It's a well-known example of smart growth out in the West Coast.
What would you say to those politicians, developers, all the people who are pro-expressway in Hamilton who say, we desperately need this freeway because it will hinder growth?
They're just wrong, because in all these examples, particularly the one in Milwaukee, they're going to have tremendous growth because they've gotten rid of their freeway. Also in Petoskey, they're maintaining a vital Main Street area, and it's going to be boosted even more by the improvements that they're making to the streets. And also in the Washington, D.C. area, that's also true, that there are efforts underway to revitalize the Center City and encourage growth there. So you're going to have growth. It's a matter of where you're going to put it. It's a smarter way to put it in your existing downtown area where you have the infrastructure and support for that.
Now, they might listen to that comment and they might say, well, how does not having a freeway in the middle of Milwaukee or, you know, the various examples, how's that going to contribute to growth? Where are you going to put the big trucks? Where are you going to put all the cars? What's going to happen in the short term?
Well, actually, the Sierra Club, along with a group called Transport 2000, the Railways to the Future Committee of Transport 2000, last year did a report that found an alternative to another damaging highway project in the Hamilton area called the Mid-Peninsula Highway. And there that they found that for just 20% of the money that you would spend on the Mid-Peninsula Highway, you could move the trucks off of the highways, get them onto the rails by enhancing the rail system. And then you could also move passengers off of the highway and get them onto better local transportation, public transit, again, better rail service, extending GO Rail from Hamilton down to the Niagara area. Their solutions, we don't have to reinvent the wheel here. They've been around for a while. They've been proven to work. They work very well in Europe. They can work here.
Politicians are looking for short-term solutions, though. I mean, how do you balance the short-term and the long-term?
Right. Yeah. A lot of people have asked about that because we are in such a crisis situation right now with our suburban sprawl and the congestion on the highways. And yeah, it took us a long time to get into this situation. It'll take a while to fix it. But there are a few things that politicians could do immediately, like right away, that the Sierra Club is calling for. First of all, stop building the highways. Put a moratorium on these highways. Just don't build them. It's such a tremendous waste of money. The other thing that we're calling for is a moratorium developing what we call green fields. Don't build in the areas that are just open farmland where you have to provide new roads and water and sewer. We found in a recent study called Sprawl Hurts Us All that it's unnecessary for the Greater Toronto Area to consume any more new green fields, that we can accommodate all the growth we're supposed to experience over the next 30 years on our existing infrastructure. That's where it should go. So I think these are just two really simple things that our politicians